Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 17, Mendy Lipsick. Mendy is a very, very skilled individual, you know, who's got a wealth of experience, including running a flower shop at the age of 13. And that's just a great story we get into. But it transfers into this Amazon business, and I think it transfers so well. I just think that when you hear his story, and then you hear how, you know, when he found that first batch of video games, something clicked for him. Well, that is what you want to find in your own life, with that click, and you can find it too. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight, I just have a very interesting individual, somebody who's really come very quickly up in the FBA world and eBay. Him and his wife, and they've been selling for a couple of years, but man, they have just really exploded. And what really struck me and what made me reach out to Mendy was the amount of help he gives to others. And I keep thinking about Chris Green saying, you know, you got to give to get and just keep, you know, jab, 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 jab. And I just see so much of that, and it just blew me away. So I'm really excited to have Mendy Lipsick on the podcast today. Welcome, Mendy.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Man, I've been slowly watching you in many different groups. I think we travel in the same circles. And I've just been seeing kind of your progress all along. And I can tell as you're going, I'm like, oh boy, there's somebody who gets it. I could see it. And the questions got better and better and better. And then, and it wasn't boasting in any way. I didn't take it that way. The accomplishments, the milestones just got stronger and stronger. And so I reach out to you because I just see you being able to help people move forward. But where did, you know, let's go back a bit and just tell us how you got into this business.
Well, it started about 2 years ago. Like many other people, you know, my full-time income wasn't leaving anything over. You know, between paying private school tuition, I've got three kids, you know, we just needed a way to make some more income. So my brother was working at the time for a large Amazon seller. And I said to him, I said, hey, you know, I dabbled in eBay years ago. I need to find some side income. You know, how do I find product to sell on Amazon? And he says, hey, man, listen, everybody's doing cell phones. Cell phones is a huge market, which it is, by the way. Rates in cell phones, I mean, 10,000 in cell phones moves a lot of product a month. And he says, and the way it works is, you know, there's one company who basically sells all these refurbished phones, and here's the name of the company, and, you know, your margins, you're going to make like 10% margins. And, but, you know, the product will move and everyone's doing it. And so I took a look at it, and at first I was like, okay, interesting, here's a product, it's, you know, supposedly it's going to turn within, you know, 2 to 3 weeks of inventory. Do I want to invest that much money on 10% margins? And I was toying with the idea, and I walked into a Target one day, and I overheard the clerk saying, one to each other, they had like a buy one, get one on video games, or maybe it was buy one, get two. And one of them said to the other, hey, that promo we've got on video games for buy one, get one is working on the clearance games too. And that just lit up a red light in my head. And I walked over, and back then Amazon didn't have their own app, and I didn't know about Profit Bandit or anything yet. And I just pulled up the Amazon listings for those games, and I said, hey, I'll clear them out, I'll try listing them MF, and worst case scenario, I'll return the games in 3 weeks. Something which I, by the way, am very against returning product these days. I say, you know, you take a loss. Unless they gave you the wrong item or a damaged item, you take the loss on yourself, keep the good relationship.
Well, I agree with that. So you would have, you weren't buying them to increase your eBay business at that point. You're saying, hey, what made the Amazon attractive? Just a conversation about cell phones, and did you investigate the market at that point, or were you familiar with it?
I was not very familiar at all. Actually, my eBay, you know, I dabbled with it 15 years ago. You know, it wasn't something I was doing at the time. It was just like, hey, I remember doing stuff back then. Amazon seems to be where it's at. Let's see what we can find.
And eBay way back then would have been a, oh my gosh, I can't imagine, you know, how difficult, you know, compared to today, just so difficult with pictures and but it was a free-for-all too, everything sold. So you get, so you're attracted to Amazon, you're thinking, hey, I'm going to merchant fulfill these items. So you buy all of them?
So I think I bought like one or two of each title.
Okay.
And I came back 2 days later to buy anything else they had left.
So you brought them back to the house, and did you with the intent to merchant fulfill, did you merchant fulfill them?
I merchant fulfilled them, was going to the post office, you know, pain in the neck, but I mean, I was like, okay, I'm not looking at this as I only made $2, I'm looking at this as I'm learning a business.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. Because you bought them at the right price, you really, it really doesn't matter. As long as they sell, you're figuring out the model, right? You're just boom, boom. And you, the pack that you got paid for is tuition plus, right? That's the best kind of tuition when you get paid.
Exactly, exactly. You know, what better business to be in where you get paid to learn?
That's a smart way to look at it. It really is a smart way. So, you know, that started, that was a couple of years ago, and you started at Target. Now, at that point, you said you had a relative who was working for a different Amazon. Was he involved in their FBA business?
They were, at the time, they were doing all MS.
Okay, so he wasn't really familiar with it. So 2 years ago, how did you find out about, or when did you find out about FBA?
So right after I started doing these first ones in MS, so we're talking Q4 of 2013, our second thing that we really bought was Black Friday. My wife went out and found these scooters by Target that were selling Black Friday for $19 and selling online listed for $110. And my wife's calling me because I, at the time, until, you know, I was not a Black Friday kind of guy. Leave me in bed. I'm not going out. And she's calling me. She's like, no, you got to check out this product. It says it sells for $110. You know, should I buy 50 or 100? I'm like, yeah, let's go with like 10 or 20. You know, never believing that people would pay so much money for this product that was regular price of $30, $35. And so we get 20, and we did those first ones. We did it at MF. I mean, they were selling immediately. It was a hot item. It was probably ranked about 100,000 in sports. But it was, as soon as we got them there, we were like the only ones on the listing, and they were selling.
So who's the entrepreneur? You or your wife?
Combination, both of us.
Who's the risk taker?
Both of us.
Huh. That's interesting. What would lead you? I mean, these are kind of things that go through my mind. I'm thinking, you know, usually opposites attract. And to see two people who are ready to take a risk, that's got to be really interesting. And it's probably a big deal for sourcing, right? I'm sure that if you have two strong risk takers, you could really take advantage of sourcing.
Right. And, even, you know, we tend to do different types of risks, I guess you could say. It'll be like sometimes I'll buy something and she'll be like, why'd you get that? And sometimes she'll buy something and I'll be like, why'd you get that? And, you know, 9 out of 10 times we were right in taking that risk. And that 10th time, you know, the losses were covered by the other 9 times.
Yeah, I've heard Sam Cohen say, you know, only have to be right 51% of the time. You know, I mean, it is really true. So you both buy today equally, or what kind of roles do you have?
So I'll do all the online arbitrage as well as the wholesale opportunities, liquidations, etc. We'll both do retail arbitrage, and then she'll do. She's the vice president of pricing, you can say. Once you know, my view is once I get that product in, she's got to get it sold. You deal with the pricing. You know what we paid. It's in the SKU. Price it where you need to be that it's going to sell.
Now, you mentioned online arbitrage, wholesale, and liquidation. So you're out there doing all three?
Absolutely.
And I do want to take us to break, but I want to, when we come back, I want to talk about the story. I saw you just recently posted about a friend that you introduced to the business and how he was able to pay you back. Because, again, I think that that's the answer, is you have to reach out. Andy Slamons would tell you that his business took off the day he started reaching out to other sellers and working with them and helping them, and then in turn them helping him. So let's go to break, and when we come back, I want to hear that story.
Sounds good.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com. For more information, that's SellerEssentials.com. All right, in this segment, we're going to talk about how to handle friends or acquaintances who, once they hear that you're in this Amazon business, they too want to make instant, easy millions. As we all know, that's not possible. He gives some great advice on how to handle that, and very surprising to me. The other big surprise is he talks about a department store, a large department store, one we all know, and how to negotiate, which type of store to negotiate with. It was a surprise to me, but looking back at the conversation, it's just so darn logical. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Mendy Lipsick, and we're talking about, you know, his race to the million, and we'll get to that in a little while. But what really fascinates me is the outreach. You know, in the beginning, I remember seeing a lot of questions coming from Mendy, but in the last 6 to 8 months, it's noticeable the amount of help. The comments, hey, I'm driving to blah, 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 I'm going to be on the road for the next 4 hours. I have free coaching available. Get in line and I'll answer and I'll help you in any way possible. And that you just don't see. And I think that that's why you're having so much success. And I think people need to really pay attention to that. But you posted a story about somebody who, I don't know, did they approach you? Did you approach them about getting in the business some way?
So a buddy of mine, who knew about my business, and he was looking for some additional streams of income as well. He's like, hey, I'd like to learn more about selling on Amazon. Can you help me? Now, anyone who's in the business knows you get 100 people who, as soon as they hear you're making money selling online, think easy income and they want to get in on it. But the amount of people that actually are willing to do the work and follow through, that's a handful. And so the first thing I ever tell anybody is buy Chris Green's book, Arbitrage, read it, see how that helps you, and then come back to me. And I've had a total of, so far, I think, one or two people who have actually come back to me and said, hey, I've read it, I've bought a few items, I listed a few items, you know, can you help me? At which point, I'm happy to help. You know, there's way more product out there than any one of us can sell. So, you know, it's not like I'm hurting myself by helping others. And so I said, hey, sure, come on over. Him and his wife were doing it together. They came over, met with me and Sarah, and we spent a couple hours together, you know, just going over different things, best practices, margins, you name it. He calls me up 2 days later, and he says, hey, man, I want to pay you back. And I don't do my helping others because I expect something. The only thing I expect is the kind of people I help, I expect them to be the kind of guy that's going to help the next person or help somebody else. And he calls me back and says, I'm picking you up in 15 minutes. I got a buddy who's a wholesaler, has his warehouse around the corner. We're going to go over there. And we got in his car, we went over there, he introduced me to the guy, and I spent thousands of dollars with the guy. You know, the guy knows Amazon business, the wholesaler, he knows what I'm looking for, he knows what I'm not looking for, doesn't waste my time, calls me up with good products. So that's just one example of where I've made out very well by helping somebody else out. And I'm just a big believer of helping people out, you know, networking is where it's at. You know, I'll tell you another story. There's another seller I posted recently about who I sent him a message last week. And I said, hey, man, did you check out Dick's Sporting Goods clearance sale? Because I just spent about $1,000 there that day. And it's like, hey, man, I don't have time for that. You're wasting your time over there. You need to hit this and this store's up. This is the product you should be looking for. You're going to do much better with that. And so I went the next day, I went to the store, and I spent $2,500 on just on the product that he told me.
Hmm. And yet you were helping him. So I want to make sure we get this tip, because I think this is something that I think people run into, they don't know how to handle. I get a ton of people asking us the same thing. When somebody finds out that you're selling online, they think it's magic unicorns and things, and it just happens. They don't understand how much work it is, right? So I love what you suggest. Send them to Amazon to buy Chris Crean's book. Make them make the investment. Don't give it to them, right? Let them put a little skin in the game. Tell them when they get done with it and they're interested to come back to you. And that really will separate some of the wheat from the chaff, right? I just think that's such a great nugget that people can use and should use on how to handle that. Because I agree with you, very few are going to come back. The ones that really do come back are probably really want to be successful. It's great advice.
Absolutely. And I mean, it helps you. Time is money. You know, when your cousin comes to you and says, hey, I want to do this, you know, whatever reason they're down on their luck and they need it, you know, some extra income. And, you know, hey, you want to help them out, but let's be realistic. You can't afford to give them 3-4 hours of your time only to realize that it was a complete waste of time. So, you know, even though they're your cousin, they may not take advantage of everything you're given. So, hey, let them read that book and come back to you. And, you know, when they do, then, you know, okay, I'll invest in helping you grow.
So now you have a background in IT. Do you think that that gives you an advantage? I notice there's a lot of numbers that you guys are crunching. Is that you or Sarah that's really crunching the numbers?
I'm the numbers guy. I've always enjoyed playing with technology. I'm a big fan of Excel. I use, and people hate this, but I love flat files. I don't use any listing software. I use Excel to create flat files to upload my inventory, create new listings, and create shipping plans. And one of the things I like about Excel is I can put formulas in Excel. For example, I want my SKUs to include the date and cost. So I don't need to go in and type in each one, July 27th, cost this. I created one cell, the formula, to copy the date from this cell, the cost from that cell, and then I just copy that same formula down the column, and all 100 items that I'm uploading today will have that unique SKU that includes the date and the cost of that specific item.
That's great. I mean, that's just great. And so you control it, right? You know that it's going right where you want it to go. That's great.
And then the other thing is, when you're looking at spreadsheets from wholesalers, liquidation spreadsheets, etc., that's where, you know, if you don't have a good grasp of Excel, you're going to be wasting your time. I mean, even getting back a sheet from, you know, if you use one of these, you know, scan sheet or evaluate to look through it, you know, you got to know how to take those cells, divide it, etc. You know, get your data. You know, for example, a lot of times looking at liquidations, it may be a mixed lot of products. You can't choose that I want this one but not that one. So I'm going to sort them in, you know, the order of maybe rank, and then I'm going to look at all the ones under a certain rank and see if my payout's enough from those to justify the shipment. Because some of the product I'll probably never sell. But by sorting it, I can analyze those numbers better.
Well, I think that's smart. I interviewed Albert from 888 Lots and ended up buying some stuff from him. And the files that he gives you are great. But you do have to work them. You just can't judge based on that. You have to manipulate them. And if you don't have that skill set, it's really worth studying. And, the beauty is you can figure this stuff out now on, you know, YouTube. You can watch a couple things and learn how to do some of that. So that's a great skill set. Do you think that you have this entrepreneur thing built into you? I mean, where's that come from?
You know, I'll tell you, when I was 13, I dropped out of school for a year, and don't ask me how I convinced my parents that. Basically, I convinced them that instead of going to school, I was going to find people to learn each subject with me for a half hour a day, each person. And so I had a lot of free time. I was actually running a flower shop at 13. And I mean, I opened in the morning, I closed it in the evening, I paid the bills, made the orders, etc. You know, when I was in school, I always had like a canteen where I was selling snacks. There was always a part of me, you know, my family didn't have money growing up. So if I wanted money, I had to find a way to earn it.
Do you think that skill set, being able to deal with customers and probably vendors at that point, if you're in that business, that's translated very well over to this business, I would assume?
Absolutely. I mean, I've done a lot of several different sales positions in my life, whether it was life insurance, selling used cell phones, actually, wholesale refurbished cell phones I was selling for a while, and the knowledge of those sales techniques that you're taught there, and you don't need to do those jobs to learn it. You know, pick up a book. I'm trying to remember some of the good ones I read. First of all, obviously, there's the Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence Others. And then there's another one. I can't remember the name of the book. But, you know, you learn these sales techniques, and that, when you're dealing with a distributor, when you're dealing with anyone, anytime you're dealing with someone with a relationship, whether it's the store manager or the liquidator, that's a sales call, so to say. And it's how you frame that that's going to influence how it goes. So take, for example, you go to the liquidator, and he says, and you act needy, then he's the one that has the upper hand. He's got the product, and you're the one that wants it, so he can, you know, you're not in a room to bargain. But if you change the context of that as, hey, I have the money, yeah, you got product, but I can get product from anywhere, then you've got the upper hand. So it's how you project it, you know. And that same thing goes, if, you know, you can be the buyer or the seller and be in the upper hand. It's how you decide to control that conversation.
I love that.
So you think they're important. I mean, when I go into stores and meet managers, oh, absolutely.
I think that's just such a great quote. I'm going to include that. Now, the other thing I notice about your business model is you're really looking to squeeze from both sides. I think you're really smart because you're buying at the right price, but you're not only buying at the right price, you're using cash back when you can, or using gift cards if you can get them at a discount too.
Absolutely.
Right. So when you start squeezing, you know, margins that way, you know, everybody says, well, how can he afford to sell it at that price? Because I'm paying X. Not everybody pays X. We all know that if you've done this for any length of time, because X minus is a volume issue. And then when you can take advantage of these other tools, are there any that stand out to you that are really really propelled your business?
So lately, gift cards have been a major part of my business. You'll be surprised sometimes, you know, 20%, if you get gift cards for 20% off, you go from a product that could, and I'm talking off the top of my head here, I don't remember the exact projection, but a product that was only making you 30, 40% before, all of a sudden it's making you close to 100% ROI. So what I do is, when I'm sourcing a site, for example, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to see what kind of discounts I can get gift cards on. And this goes for in-store as well if you're doing retail arbitrage. You know, depending on the store, you know, you can see how much you're going to spend there, estimate it, and towards the end before you go check out, you know, you can buy those gift cards and pay for it, right, you know, pay for it with gift cards. So, for example, let's say I walk into Dick's Sporting Goods, and I see that I'm going to get a 15% off on the gift cards, then automatically I know the lowest price that I see on that item, I'm only paying 85% of it.
Love it. And then, right, you can you use those to negotiate a better deal? So if you say, hey, if you got $1,000 worth of gift cards, can you go in and say, hey, can I talk to the manager? And, you know, and they got a lot of clearance or what have you. You're saying, hey, I'm going to spend $1,000. What else can you do for me, right? Have you run into that situation?
Well, so I don't use the gift cards up front as the negotiating tool. What I'll do is I'll walk in and I'll say, hey, I'm ready to spend $5,000 here today, you know, if you've got the, if you've got enough product at the right price for me, you know. And what I do is before I even negotiate with someone, typically I want to know what I'm buying, what's going to be worth my time. And the reason is very simple. If you walk into a Walmart and you go over to the manager, say, hey, man, I want to buy a bunch of your clearance, you know, what can you do for me? He's heard that from so many people so many times, and their idea of a bunch of things is they bought 15 toys, okay? If I'm walking in and talking to him, my definition is at least 100 items, if not, you know, a lot more. I'm talking about spending thousands with him. So you got to show the guy, you're almost at a disadvantage with the Walmart manager because he's got that mindset of all these people come through making these things. I don't even want to bother with them. But what I'll do is I'll look through it and I'll know what I'd buy if he gave me an additional 50% off, okay? Or what I'd buy if he gave me an additional 25% off. And, you know, you do this long enough, you get an idea for which stores, what kind of discounts they can give you. And so what I'll do is I'll look and I'll say, okay, there's all that. There's 4 feet of Lego over there that I'll take all of it at 50% off. And there's, he's got that item on the end cap that he's got 100 units clearance on, so I know he wants to get rid of it. And then I'll walk over to the manager and say, hey, listen, my name is so-and-so, hand him my card. I do a lot of work with, you know, Walmarts and other, you know, Targets, etc., purchasing their clearance. I said, I noticed you're really heavy there. I'd love to help you out. And notice how I said help him out instead of him helping me out. I'd love to help you get rid of some of that stuff. I'll tell you what, man, if you'd like to work with me today, if you gave me 50% off, I'd be able to take all of that product plus more.
And that's usually successful. And so then, at the end, can you still try to pay with a gift card, or has that become the awkward moment?
Typically, it's not a problem.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, it's kind of a situation where you want to know your gift cards, etc. I had a funny story. I got a store that I hit up every month or two, and they actually give me 20% off anything in the store across the board. And this is part of a big chain. And I was talking to the store manager the other day over the phone, you know, planning my next visit, and he says, hey, listen, I got a call from corporate. They said to me, hey, it's one thing you're giving this guy 20% off, you know, but he's sitting there paying for it with merchant credit gift cards. You know, we think he's sitting there buying the product by you, returning it for full price by the next store, and then coming to you and buying more product. And so I had to reassure him and say, hey, you know, what it is, I'm buying them off, you know, these gift card sites. So, you know, a guy comes into your store, returns shoes for $100, gets gift card credit. He wants cash, so he's sending it, selling to me for $80. And he says, oh, okay, that's fine. I just needed to go back to corporate and, you know, be able to say that, you know, you're not sitting there scamming us, you know. And he's not going to have a problem with me paying with gift cards next time either. There's also situations where you're in a store where, in order to not make it as noticeable, they want those transactions split up. And in order not to link the items, if the transactions, if someone doesn't see, hey, so-and-so spent a bunch of transactions that look shady, they don't want me using the same credit card on each transaction. So, you know, there could be different scenarios there. It's good to know how the gift cards work. And then there's stores where it's simply a matter of knowing that the store only allows $500 in gift cards per transaction, let's say. Okay, mm-hmm. So by you knowing those kinds of stuff over time, learning it, it means you're going to have a good relationship with them versus the cashier rings you up for $1,500 worth, and then you find out, oh, you can only spend $500 on gift cards, so she needs to void it all out, start all over, etc.
That's great advice, though. Again, know the business. You know some of these managers, right, because you're in there frequently and you have a relationship. And, you know, I think you're being honest with them and candid, and I think that that's the art. You know, if you lie to them, you're going to get in trouble. So that's great advice.
I always tell people up front I'm a reseller. I'll tell you what, everyone knows Target doesn't allow resellers anymore. I did a lot of business by Target with Black Friday last year. I am probably going to walk into Target's, what are we now, August, in October, maybe beginning of November, and I'm going to start making relationships with the managers, because that's the only time of the year, by the way, that I shop Target is, you know, Black Friday, Q4, and I'm just going to say to them bluntly, hey, listen, I'll pay the sales tax, I don't mind, I just want to know, do you want my sales, okay? If you're able to work with me, great. If not, that's fine. I'm going to be upfront with you. I'm not going to come in here sneaking behind your back buying this product. I'll just go to the next Target. I got the money. You want the extra $10,000 in sales or whatever? That's fine. You can have it. You don't want it? That's fine, too.
And it's really the art, I think, is making those relationships with these stores and just talking with them and being honest. And I like your story about Walmart and Lego. I was able to buy a tremendous amount of clearance Lego at 50% off. Massive. Then I go to the next one and, no, oh, my God, they're looking at me like I have a third eye. They're like, oh, we could never do that. And I'm thinking, the other one did. Go to another one, same story. And it's just, oh, they're marked down as low as they're going to get. And I'm thinking to myself, this other guy gets it. He has to get it out of there. He's got to move it. It's not moving any other way. When I go back, that clearance Lego is all still sitting there. You know, they haven't sold any of it.
So, here's part of where working retail had an advantage for me. I know the business. I know how it works. Okay, so when I go into this Walmart that's the busiest one in this zone, if not division, that store manager has the flexibility to make those discounts because he's the golden child. Yeah, the zone manager or district manager may give him a little bit of grief, you know, about the fact that he got rid of his clearance a little faster at a steeper discount. But it really boils down to, is that a profitable store for the company? Is he making his goals and everything else? And you know what? He's going to get away with it. But if you're this little rundown Walmart, you're not going to get away with it. You know, bad enough you're losing me money here, here, and here. Now you want to lose me money on the clearance too? So, and I'll tell you another funny thing, though, about Walmart and relationships. And with Walmart managers, Sarah is heads up the better one at making relationships with them. And she's got our local Walmart. She has been eating out of her hands. She comes in there. They'll push her cart around. When she's doing her personal shopping, the store manager is pushing her cart around. On Black Friday, you know, sales starts at 10 o'clock. She's in there at 8 o'clock. The store manager is going around with her opening up pallets so, you know, she can get her products out, you know, and start loading her carts. And then she's already got 3 carts full, so they need a place to stash it. And store manager's like, you want to check out? She's like, well, I got to wait till 10. He's like, oh, yeah. So he went over, pushed all the carts into a checkout lane. Busiest day of the year, he shut down the checkout lane so that my wife had a place to store her carts. And at 10 o'clock, when the sales went live, my wife was the first one checking out.
That's just great. And it's just over time, being consistent, treating them fairly, and being respectful. I think that's really important.
Absolutely. Show them you're on their side.
So you really have a group you're involved in a lot of different groups, right? And the one that I've been following that I'm really interested in is your Race to the Million. And so tell me how that got started.
You know, it was simply the book, The 4-Hour Work Week, I was reading that book. I actually won it off of one of the groups. I started reading it, and it spoke about, you know, making achievable goals and how you, you know, things you can do to make them achievable. And one of my goals was to sell $1 million in sales in a single year. And so I said, okay, well, how am I going to go about doing that? And I said, well, it's going to be by holding myself accountable. And we all know that, you know, anytime you set goals, whether it's a diet or any other goals, the best way to achieve them is by sharing those goals with others. Because then they're going to say, hey, Mendy, how's that goal of yours to sell $1 million on Amazon going? And, you know, you want to be able to say you've got the progress. But if nobody knows your goals, if you don't do it, nobody's going to know. So that's why I started Race to the Million. And I post different things about the business there when we hit milestones, etc. But what it kind of a lot of what I try to do there, though, is really share in-depth insight into different business strategies, etc.
I notice it, and what I see when you post a milestone, others are posting theirs. It's like kind of a safe place where you can kind of it almost, I don't see any judging. I don't see anybody looking down their nose. I see a lot of encouraging, and I think that's just a great place for it. It's just really neat to see that group of people to come together.
Absolutely. You know, anytime I hear from a new seller, and I hear from, you know, when I do the coaching calls and whatnot, I'm nowhere near you. You know, I did a 200, you know, it was my first month I did $200 in sales, or it's my third month that I did 2,000. You know what? There's that old saying, you know, the journey of 1 million miles starts with the first step. I've changed it. The journey to $1 million starts with the first dollar. You know, you're not going to do $1 million in sales without that first sale.
Love it. The journey to $1 million starts with the first dollar. Love it. Okay. So we're at the end of the podcast, right? And one of the goals of the podcast is to help people move forward, right? And so what I'm looking for from you, Andy, is a piece of advice, a tip, a trick, a process improvement that somebody can put into their business, regardless of what size they are, tomorrow, so they could start moving forward, right? You get to that stuck point. A lot of people make it to that $10,000 or $20,000 a month sales, still not enough to really live or make a real lifestyle income, and they want to get past it, but they just can't. So give us something that you have that you think that can help people move forward.
So, you know, there's two things that I try to tell everybody. The first one, we kind of covered, and that's networking. Get together with other sellers. Find other sellers in your make a local meetup, you know. People view it as, oh, no, this is my territory. I don't want to speak with other people. They might, you know what, you may give away something, but you're going to get far back in return. You know, so start networking. And don't network with expectation of getting back. Network with expectation of, hey, we're all going to help each other out over here, but, hey, I've got some information that's going to benefit you guys. I want to share. And the way I look at it is, by the way, no, I'm not going to tell you my most profitable item if I think it's going to if it's going to cost me by sharing that. So look at the information you share as, can I share this with other people without it hurting my business? Okay, it might be an item that I sold a bunch of, but I can't even get it locally anymore, or I know I'm only going to have a limited amount that I can get. So you know what? I'm going to tell the guy, you know, a buddy of mine in Atlanta, hey, go out to Walmart and look for this and this item, because there's enough for us both to make money. And then he's going to, and then I'm not expecting it, but he'll come back to me and say, hey, Mendy, when you're in Walmart, get this and this as well. And now, okay, I've just doubled the amount of items. You know, now I'm looking for two items instead of one every Walmart I walk into.
It's great advice, and it's just a great tip. And I just, you know, it's one of those common threads that I see from a lot of very successful sellers. The day they started reaching out and helping others, the help came back to them tenfold. And so I just think that's great advice.
Yeah.
Okay, so how can people find out more information and get in touch with you?
We're on Facebook, Sarah and Mendy Lipsick. We have our group called Race to the Million. And, you know, so we're out there on Facebook.
Okay, and I'll put those links in for you. And I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy. I got some young kids, and you just moved, and so you got a lot on your plate. But you took the time out again to help others move forward. So really appreciate it. Hey, thanks, and have a good night.
Yeah, have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.